In Saudi Arabia, somber Muslim pilgrims resumed their ritual at the Hajj today, following the deaths of more than 700 people yesterday, trampled in Mecca's deadliest disaster in 25 years. 2 weeks ago, more than 100 other people died when a crane collapsed outside of the Grand Mosque. And today, thousands of Iranian protesters marched in Tehran, denouncing what they called Saudi incompetence. These tragedies have prompted questions about expansion at the mosque, already the largest in the world. And our next guest writes about development in Mecca, where the city's landscape has been completely overhauled since the 1990s, some of it at the expense of holy and historical sites. Yale history professor Rosie Bashir is co-editor of the online journal Jadalia, where she published The Property Regime, Mecca and the Politics of Redevelopment in Saudi Arabia. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Well, let's start where you start in the article, where you note that there have been very profound changes in the physical fabric of Mecca, and that began after the Gulf War in 1990. What was significant about that period of time?
The period of time is significant because there was a global recession immediately after the 1991 Gulf War, which was worsened by the 1997 Asian economic crisis. So investing Saudi capital abroad was no longer as profitable as it had been in earlier decades. In order for the Saudi regime to keep capital locally, what it did is invest its own capital in land and property, first starting in Mecca, and more specifically, starting with the development of King Abdulaziz Endowment Project, which is basically the complex that today houses Mecca's clock tower. This project was conceived in the mid-1990s. Work on designing the project began in 1999, and actual construction began in 2002. Of course, the whole mountain on which the project was built has since fallen to the force of dynamite, including the Ajyad Fortress, which was an 18th century Ottoman military site that was once the Grand Mosque's major defense against invading forces. And I mentioned this project because it was the engine that basically propelled the massive redevelopment of central Mecca and encouraged global capital to invest in the city despite the global economic stagnation. So under the Saudi Bin Laden Group, which has since the 1950s basically overseen all development projects in central Mecca, redevelopment there has been purely driven by capital interests and profits, perhaps more so than in many other world cities, given Mecca's property values are among the highest in the world.
Can you describe to us a little bit about how Mecca actually looks for those who haven't been? I mean, what's the physical outcome of all of this capital investment?
Since the late 1990s specifically, urban redevelopment has overhauled the city's physical landscape with the wholesale destruction of the neighborhoods immediately surrounding the Grand Mosque. Some parts have been developed, others still look like craters. When you go to Mecca today, it's quite jarring. You are surrounded by construction. Cranes overlook people, specifically when you're inside the Grand Mosque, but throughout central Mecca, there are cranes all over the place. The air quality is quite bad. Pollution is rampant. Traffic is quite awful because of the lack of proper planning. This has been a great problem in Mecca in the last 15 years, I would say.
Well, you write in your piece that the Saudi government has also been trying to rebrand Mecca as a modern 21st century city. But in doing so, and because of the urban redevelopment you just described, that's actually heightening disparities between the haves and have-nots here in what is basically the most important city in the entire Islamic world. So how is that disparity being further widened?
First and foremost, the new Mecca affects the longtime residents of the city, many of whom have been forced to leave their homes, homes that in most cases have been passed down from one generation to another. Now, those evicted from their homes have received meager compensation in return. Many have even ended up in slums and are still homeless. Now, the new Mecca is designed with maximizing profits in mind. So it is meant for the rich and the affluent, which in return has driven prices up, affecting both residents and pilgrims. So in terms of the Hajj itself, this means that it has become increasingly difficult for pilgrims without means to secure affordable accommodations, because many of these have been destroyed and replaced by luxury hotels and apartment complexes that we've seen regularly in the media lately. Now, those without means now have to live even further away from central Mecca, making the Hajj even more difficult for them in terms of affordability, but also transportation and logistics. So the Saudi regime has recently paid lip service to the idea of building more affordable housing for non-wealthy pilgrims, but there simply is no incentive for them to do so, given the remarkable profit margins on upscale accommodations, basically.
Right. Well, you know, you write in your article about those, you know, several $1,000 a night hotel rooms that you just mentioned, and how some of the prayers during the Hajj for these wealthy pilgrims can be actually done from their hotel rooms, and that this is approved of by leadership there. Doesn't that run counter to the purpose of the Hajj?
It sort of does. The Hajj is meant to be an equalizer of sorts, at least historically it has been. This class division that we've experienced or witnessed recently defeats the purpose of the pilgrimage and the sense of spiritual communion it is meant to generate by dividing those with means from others, therefore allowing, for example, the wealthy and the affluent to pray in the comfort of their own luxury homes and residences that are immediately overlooking the Grand Mosque. But also it allows them to be more comfortable in performing the remaining Hajj rituals that they have. And what they do is they hire luxury Hajj tour guides that make sure that they are comfortable throughout the period of the Hajj. Again, defeating the purpose of the Hajj. And this was a measure that was sanctioned in 1998 by the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia at the time, Abdulaziz ibn Abdullah ibn Baz, who allowed those who are able to stay in accommodations immediately surrounding the Grand Mosque to pray there, and it would count for them as if they were praying inside the mosque.
Hmm. Well, you know, there's an interesting, very interesting point that you make in your article. That you say that basically there hasn't been much mass media attention being paid to this profound physical transformation of Mecca until recently, because the media just reasoned that Saudi Wahhabism or Wahhabi iconoclasm was the reason behind this full-scale urban destruction. But then you say towards the end of the article that it's actually the Wahhabi establishment that's become a central partner in the move towards, in your words, materializing and territorializing official Saudi history. What do you mean by that?
So first, to go back to your point about the media, the Saudi regime actually put in place a media blackout on Mecca throughout the 1990s and 2000s. That is the prime reason why we did not hear much about it in the news. It's not about who was behind it or the iconoclasm of the Wahhabis. What I mean about the other point that you were making is that we in the media and in academia sometimes very quickly blame the iconoclasm of Wahhabism for such destructions. But what we do not pay attention to is the actual politics behind it, right? Because the Saudi regime has actually supported this from the get-go because of the kinds of profits that has allowed them. And this point is made much starker when you look at how the Wahhabi establishment, the religious establishment, has been aiding symbolically, politically, and otherwise, the construction of historical sites in places like Riyadh. So basically the construction of secular sites, sites that commemorate the Al Saud family, basically.
Hmm. Well, finally, has there been any pushback amongst, you know, those many displaced peoples in Mecca that you were telling us about earlier? I mean, is there a sense that all this development has gone too far?
Let me answer this in a different way. So since the late 1990s, the Saudi regime has stressed the speed of construction at the expense of everything else. And the Saudi bin Laden group, which has been in charge of redevelopment in Mecca, has been more than willing to comply, again, given the profits that both were and are generating. Now, this has come at the expense of safe and, if I can say, smart planning. And the bin Laden group has time and again compromised on implementing safety standards in order to cut on costs and time, of course, with the complete knowledge of the Saudi rulers. Now, this, in addition to the large numbers of pilgrims that the Saudi regime has allowed, have created a recipe for disaster. But other than these major tragedies, people inside and outside Saudi Arabia rarely hear about the regular accidents that occur in Mecca, from fires to collapsing buildings, basically. Mm. Yet many Saudis in Mecca have sensed for at least a decade, maybe even more, that redevelopment in Mecca is very poorly planned and not going in the direction they want. Of course, there have been groups calling on better and more sustainable development of the city since the 1970s. And to the surprise of many people, there have been voices even among the religious establishment in Saudi Arabia that have been critical of the trajectory of the development as well. But the regime has rarely heeded their advice. And in terms of the people who have been dislocated or evicted from their homes, they have had very little recourse, and they have not been able to even be vocal, given the control over the media, basically.
Well, Rosie Bashir teaches history at Yale University and is co-editor of the online journal Jadalia. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.